Hello everybody and welcome to Plonkers for what may well be the last Trust social of this season. Hopefully we might be celebrating something quite soon, and therefore we just don't know whether May will be a goer or not. So all I would say is watch social media, see what happens. We might be having a celebratory event, we might, but there are no plans at present for a May social, so this could be the last one of the season. I'd like to thank Steve Wood and Plonkers for hosting us this evening. There's a few other things I'd like to say, one of which is you may have seen Julianne speak on video about the importance of the Trust.
Yeah.
It's often we're often undermined as a supporters trust. If you join, it's £10 a year. You're safeguarding the club in so many ways. And if you're not a member and don't understand what happens, the money that we raise, it goes to the club ultimately, because from that pot of money that we have, we make donations to the club. It's probably more important than ever now that you join, because it's only right they're putting substantial sums of money in, and if other supporters can chip away and put something in, then that's great. Dan's with us tonight. I'm going to ask him to speak about a picture that I saw this morning. It's been a great year in so many respects, and so Dan's done a fabulous picture. He's got it signed by the team, and he's raising money for Harry Rowntree and the Candlelighters. So we've all come together massively this year. Clubs united, players united, so you'll be able to bid on it. I'll ask him to speak about that perhaps at the end of the night. So, tonight's guests. The first one up is going to be Pat Lally in a moment or two. Following on from that, we're going to have Tony Canham, who knows a bit about winning. He scored a penalty at Wembley. He's got loads of good stories. Scored at Anfield, I believe, as well. He's scored all over, and the Don is at the back of the room, and everybody knows Clayton Donaldson. So I hope you're going to have a fabulous evening. I hope if you're not members of the Trust, you'll join. It's not essential for these nights. They are good enough to invite all supporters. I'm now going to hand over and give thanks to Dan Tate, who has been hosting these events all year. They are recorded so that supporters in other parts of the country can hear him. He provides a great insight into the club, so I'll give you, for now, Dan Tate.
Thank you. And Pat Lally, your applause for being here to join us. Can I just say, when you were saying about the drawing and saying Dan's done this straight, it's not me. There's a few people looking at me like, Lally, post this and he draws. I don't. So, welcome back, Pat. I think it was about a year ago, I think we last met at the social about this time last year.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah.
And I was trying to think of questions that I didn't ask you last time. So, growing up in London, you played for Millwall, signed for York City in 1971. I just wondered, what was the transition like coming from London to York? Because a lot of us have lived in York, we've gone to London, found it really busy and a bit scary at times. But what's it like going the other way?
A pleasure.
Fair enough.
I must admit, I found living in London and playing for Millwall quite hectic. I lived just outside Southend, so the travelling as a 16-year-old from Southend into Millwall on a daily basis meant getting up 5:30 in the morning, catching a fast train into Fenchurch Street in London, and getting a couple of tubes then out to Coldblow Lane. And it's quite daunting and quite tiring. And if there was a night game, or you're playing for the reserves, then you went home at lunchtime, then come back in the evening to go back home again. So it was quite hectic, and I don't think you'd see many apprentices doing that these days, let alone professionals. So I eventually ended up having a hemiplegic migraine one day, coming home and collapsed at Upminster Station. Woke up in hospital, and that at the end of the day, you know, made up my mind, if I ever had the opportunity to get out of London, I'd get out.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say I woke up at San Theo City. I was like, story. 21 years old, I think you were when you came to York. Were you kind of left to your own devices? I don't know what they were back in the 70s, were they putting you up in digs and stuff like that, or were you just kind of like fending for yourself?
Yeah, you were you know, when Tom signed me, he did arrange for me to go into Dick's with Mr. and Mrs. Dawson, just round the corner from the ground. A lovely couple, a brilliant couple, in fact. The only problem was that we had a deadline at 10 o'clock in the evening to be in. If we weren't in at 10 o'clock, then the door was locked and that was it. And
what about if you had an night game? Were you?
we slept on the coach.
Right. Was there any sort of, did you feel pressure to kind of make that move work? Because like you say, you'd been at Millwall, I think you'd made maybe one appearance, was that right? And then at York City, were you sort of thinking, if this move doesn't work out, then maybe professional football's not for me?
I always felt I had the ability, and I think I've said before that it was a joy for me to get out of London and come and play for York City. I was disappointed that I signed at the same time as John Woodward, and we signed down at King's Cross Station, or we agreed to sign down at King's Cross Station with Tom. We were both there, and again, some of you might have heard me say before, he offered John a 2-year contract and offered me a 3-month contract. So there was a lot of pressure on me when I came up to ensure that I impressed. Thankfully I did that.
Yeah, and you impressed in a team that was, I'd say, pretty ropey really when I look at the stats. I mean, you stayed up on goal difference both seasons, along with 4 other teams, I think, both seasons as well, which is pretty incredible. But you played some quite big cup ties for York City, didn't you? I noticed against Middlesbrough, Sheffield United, there were like 20,000-30,000 in both those games.
Yeah, there was. We played Middlesbrough. Nobby Styles had just signed for Middlesbrough. We drew with them 1-1 here at Bootham Crescent, and then went up to Middlesbrough and beat them 2-1 at Middlesbrough, and then drew Sheffield United in the next round, who were top of the First Division at that time. A fantastic side. And we went there, and we were holding them 2-2 with a minute to go. And then Woodward scored a screamer, which was a killer really for us. But going back to the, you know, just avoiding relegation, I'm pleased to say that I scored the goal that kept us up 1 year as well, on goal difference. So that was one of my claims to fame for playing for York City.
Yeah, I'm glad that you did. And even though the team didn't do particularly well in the league, you played alongside quite a lot of York City legends really. Graham Crawford, Chris Topping, Phil Burrows, Jimmy Seals. So what's your memories of playing alongside those players?
They were a great team. We were a good side with good players, but for some reason, we just didn't seem to gel together. Obviously, they did when they got rid of me. We got promotion that season. But yeah, with Paul Ainson, you know, Laurie Calloway, you know, Brian Pollard came into the side, Tommy Henderson, Phil Burrows, John Mackin. You know, it was Eddie Rowles. You know, there were some really, really good players in that side. But as I say, for some reason, we just didn't seem to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, and you were sold to Swansea for, I think, £6,000 or £7,000.
£7,500,
which,
pounds, yeah,
back in the 70s, was a lot of money. I was trying to put it into ChatGPT to see what it was worth. And it was about 110 grand, I think, it said, in today's money. So obviously, big, big money for Swansea. Were you kind of just told you're going, sort of thing? How did you end up leaving York City?
I was actually on holiday in Greece at the time, and as you do, you make friends with people on the beach and you get talking, and this young guy said to me, I see you've been sold to Swansea. I said, oh, I must have been doing well for York then if Tom sold me. But when I got back, went in to see Tom, because we'd had negotiations about signing another contract, but there was a disagreement over what he was offering and what I wanted. He wanted to put me on £28.50. I was on £28. He wanted to put me on £28.50, and I wanted £32.50, and we couldn't agree. So that's the reason why he sold me. But when I thought about that, after we spoke about it before, when we played, Harry Gregg was the manager of Shrewsbury at the time, and when we played Shrewsbury, his assistant, Jimmy Mack, played in the team, in the Shrewsbury team, and he did actually say to me at the time, while we were playing, do you fancy signing for Harry at Shrewsbury? Well, I said, well,
whilst you were playing, sorry.
While we were playing.
Right.
I said, well, not really. I said, I'm happy here at York. And I never ever thought anything else about that then until after we'd spoken about it before. And obviously, Harry got the sack at Shrewsbury joined Swansea as manager, and obviously he was still interested in me. He must have put in a bid. And off I went to for Swansea.
And just going back slightly, Tom Johnson, you mentioned there. I remember speaking to Graham Crawford about him. He seemed quite unorthodox, shall we say. And I remember him saying that pre-season that they were kind of running around the Knavesmire, and he was just sat in his car that was full of smoke because he was just smoking his
cigarettes. Yeah, Tom very rarely got changed into any training equipment. He just stayed in his overcoat and his cap on, smoking his pipe in his car. And you've probably heard Graham say before that on one occasion he did actually leave his car, which was a brand new one that he just bought, and we thought we'd have a bit of a laugh, and we were covered in mud. He'd left the doors open, silly man, and we just all ran through his car in our dirty boots. Well, when Tom came back, it was in a light state. As you can imagine, he weren't too happy about that.
I can see why he didn't offer you the £32.50. And what sort of things have you been doing in the ambassador role since we sort of last saw you?
Obviously, recently done with Richard a ground tour. Been across to do obviously one of the games in the lounge, sponsors lounge, and did a talk in the sponsors lounge. Obviously, living in Huddersfield, it's a bit more difficult for me to get across than somebody that lives a bit local. But I'm happy to do whatever the club wants me to do if I'm available.
Yeah, of course. And just finally, we touched upon last time your role with the PFA. You're obviously at the long association with them, and you talked last time about how you'd helped someone who'd become a doctor, and they kind of remembered you on their kind of part of the journey. I just wondered what other sort of things did you see in your time at PFA? What would you say was sort of your biggest achievements and legacy that you've left behind?
During my time, 40 years I spent at the PFA, so it was a long career working for the Players Association, and there was about 20,000 young players that come through during that time, and for me it's been a pleasure to see so many of them go on to make careers outside of football in terms of obviously you mentioned the doctor, the orthopaedic surgeon. But we've had lawyers come through, we've had forensic scientists, we had one lad who's head of the anti-terrorist squad in the Metropolitan Police in London, used to play for Colchester. There's so many of them that progressed into careers that you would not expect. Probably one of the weirdest ones is we've had probably in my time a dozen that have gone into the priesthood or become a vicar, and who would have ever thought of players becoming a priest or a vicar, the reputations suddenly stopped.
I can't see Josh Stones in here. Yeah, and it's incredible, and you mentioned there some of those jobs that footballers get a bit of a reputation for, they left school quite early, probably not intelligent, but obviously some of those roles there are very high profile, aren't they?
They are, and I think football players are underestimated in just how intelligent they are. I mean, we left school because we loved the game that we eventually made a career of. If we'd stayed on at school and did our A-levels, who knows where we could have gone on to. But once you've been in the professional game for 10, 15 years, and maybe longer in some cases, the transition becomes more difficult unless you've actually educated yourself while you're still playing. And the unfortunate thing with footballers, not only back in the day, but in the current day, they're not proactive towards educating themselves towards that transition from playing football. We're all tunnel visioned. We all think the career, probably like yourselves, you don't think your time's ever going to come to an end. But eventually it does. Your body gives up. Your mind still wants to do it, but the body gives up. And if you haven't prepared for that transition, it becomes very, very difficult. My advice always to the younger players when they came in at 16 was, continue to educate yourself throughout your playing career. And the world's your oyster if you do that.
Yeah, and that's a great legacy to leave. So, Pat Lally, everyone. Thank you. Thanks, Pat. Tony getting stripped off, ready to come on. So the word legend gets bandied about an awful lot, but this is an absolutely true York City legend. Over 350 appearances, which includes scoring at Anfield, winning promotion at Wembley. This is Tony Cannon. So I would describe you as an old-fashioned winger. Don't take offence to that, but I think that's what you're really good at. You know, taking people on, obviously, the song and everything. So I wondered, did you base your sort of style on anyone in particular? I know you were a big Leeds fan, weren't you, growing up?
Yeah, I don't think I based it on anyone. My favourite player was Eddie Gray, who still goes to Leeds games now. But no, I mean, it was. I know that crowds love to see anybody that takes people on. I don't think we see it enough nowadays, to be honest. But, you know, everybody likes an exciting, somebody who takes it on, gets a cross in. So I've always been like that, so I've never based it on anybody.
No. Did you always play on the wing? Is that
what
you
saw? I always played on wing, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I don't think, you know, like I said, they don't make wingers like you anymore, but they also don't really make 25-year-olds who've played in non-league for a long time and then all of a sudden get a pro contract. So just talk us through that, because it is a pretty incredible journey how you got to York City, wasn't it? And include the hat-trick against York for Harrogate Railway.
Yeah, well, I played for Harrogate Railway, and like a lot of local clubs, York used to bring a team to them. And I was just fortunate enough on that day. They brought quite a decent squad this time. I remember Stevie Senior just broke his leg and he came. He was in rehab and he played in a few first-teamers. And we beat him 3-0, and I was fortunate to get all three. And then I got a phone call from Dennis Smith, or Viv, just to go and play in reserves, which obviously I did for a season. Then after that, then they invited me back a year after. And I went from there, I just played in reserves. I think it was the cup run when they played Liverpool first time that Dennis asked me to go training with them, and I went on a Friday. I didn't know why he'd asked me. I think I played on Tuesday for reserves. Went training on Friday and he says, "You're playing tomorrow." And that was Swindon at home, I think it was. Which were obviously were great to me. I didn't have any nerves at all. Fortunately enough, I scored and we won 1-0.
Header as well, eh?
Yeah, header, yeah. The second game away, we were all away. That was a total shock to me. Like, used to be behind goal back there when you come out there. Yeah, I mean, more money picking coins up that they're throwing at me. So then I think I played another three games, but then Walwyn came back and a couple of others, because they had that really good cup run, so they rested a few.
Yeah, and that game where you got a hat-trick against York City, was there any sort of players that you remember skinning and taking on?
I think Senna were marking it, Steve Senior, yeah. But I keep, he was coming back from a broken leg.
I bet you loved that, didn't he? Come back from a broken leg out, nice things against Harrogate Railway, and then saw you running past him. And I wanted to talk about some of your classic moments, you know, Liverpool at home. You did an amazing run early on in that game, didn't you? But you can see quite clearly on the highlights where you skin a few players in. And I know you played it down when I spoke to you before, saying it was because the pitch was crap.
It should never have been played, you know. I mean, the pitch was horrendous. But yeah, I mean, that's me. I'll just try to take them on. You know, that was one of my games to shine, if you like. You know, to pick yourself in some of the best players in country at that time. I mean, Liverpool were champions. Every time I got ball, you just try to take them on and just see what happens, yeah?
Yeah.
But the pitch were horrendous. It should have never been played.
I'm quite glad it did.
I've got a little story about that you've probably heard before. When we drew 1-0 at our place, it shouldn't have been played. Then we played at Anfield, and as you know, we got beaten extra time. I always remember Dennis Smith doing an interview afterwards, and commentator were asking him about a game. He said, "Yeah, we did really well." But if you remember the first game, Kenny Dalglish was saying, "We should never have played on this pitch, it's a joke, it's an absolute joke, shouldn't have played." And when they interviewed Smithy afterwards, he says, "I wasn't happy with that pitch." And they said, "Aren't you?" We never played on it as good as that before.
I mean, you said there about playing at Anfield that you missed out, obviously, that you scored. I know you said it wasn't the greatest strike. But still, to say that you've scored at Anfield, and what, a year after you've been playing for Railway, it must be sort of pinch yourself moments.
Same as Andy Lanning. I mean, me and Andy played against each other literally near enough to today, a year previous. Andy played for Roundtree and I played for Railway. And like, I can all remember, we were at a corner against Copend, and me and Andy, and we just said to each other, "This is a bit different from a year ago, isn't it?" I remember Alan Ball, my dad telling me years ago, Alan Ball, when he played in the World Cup when he was a kid, his dad said to him, "Take everything in if you can." And that's what I did then, and I did it at Wembley as well. Yeah. To try to take as much of it in, because, you know, you forget a lot of things, but I just tried to take everything that I'd done on that Liverpool game, the trip there, changing rooms, players' bar afterwards, my mum and dad were there, my wife, my kids. Yeah, I just tried to take it all in and just try and remember
it all. Took it all in, but don't remember the goal that he scored.
I didn't see it because it went through his arms, didn't it? It was then throwing him in, wasn't it? Yeah.
And when I've spoke to some people over the years on the podcast, you can see in that, like, certainly with Gary Ford, you could see it in his eyes, he was still raging about what happened at Anfield and foul that wasn't and everything. Yeah. How are you kind of like, are you philosophical about it now years on, or are you quite angry, or how do you feel about it?
I'm not angry about it now, no. No, it definitely shouldn't have been disallowed. I think because he goes to a lot of games, doesn't he?
Lawrenson,
yeah. I think he put in programme, or certainly one of the goal players put in programme, so he got to Wembley, didn't that year, and played Everton. He said it should never have been disallowed, but it will. I mean, Keith Waldron was a big bustling lad, and he just went, he got the ball actually, but went through Anson and Groblin as well, and I think referee bottled it a bit as well.
Yeah, and the sort of thing that happens.
Yeah, I mean, we were gutted afterwards in changing rooms, obviously, because we thought we should have won it, and it were a travesty. Who's to say that, I don't know how long the left wing Waldron scored, but we could have got beat then, but you always hang on to that. We could have been. We could have been, yeah.
And I remember, I can't quite remember who said it to me, but someone said that Kenny Dalglish was like moaning git on the pitch, so I wondered what your recollection was of
I think it swears a lot of referees as well, but it's definitely moaning, constantly moaning all the time, at players, at referee, at linesmen,
Awesome.
Didn't get it.
And I recently read Andy Leaning's autobiography. I don't know if you've
got it. I got it to sign.
Yeah.
I still put about 50p on your book. It's everyone did that, and it's a great book.
It's a really good read. What I sort of found fascinating about it was, obviously, a lot of these games were before my time, so how much of a big role did Busby had in that kind of setup? Like, in terms of, I knew, like, John Bernard told me that he did a lot of work with the strikers involved. Did Busby an ex-striker himself, but he obviously did a lot of work with Andy Leaning as well, on goalkeeping, the extra drills. So I wondered what was he like coaching you, and what was your relationship like with him?
They were brilliant. Like you say, we were a forward with him, and we used to split in the house, and Viv would take forwards, and Dennis would take full-backs and centre of the house. But Viv Busby were brilliant. Yeah, he taught me a lot. He taught me, I mean, playing from non-league and that, he told me, where to stand in different positions, always to come out wide. You know what I mean? Play that one too. He had a really good knowledge. He played in some great teams, didn't he, his brother?
Yeah.
Played in cup final, didn't he, for Fulham?
Good influence.
I mean, he was really good. I mean, with Andy and myself, because we'd come from non-league, I think he had a bit of a soft thing for us, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were both good. Dennis and Viv Busby were both brilliant.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And I think Dennis rightly gets a lot of the plaudits, but I think I've noticed over the years when I've been doing the podcast that I've realised how much of a bigger role that did kind of have on that, and influence he had on that back set.
And he always had time. If you ever wanted to do any crossing, shooting afterwards, or like you said, Andy, he'd take Andy for goalkeeping afterwards, he was always there, he'd never say no, but any time you wanted to, he'd give you that extra time.
Yeah. And, some of the players that you played with as well, like, John McPhail, like you mentioned, Big Keith, and Paul Barnes, John McCarthy. So I asked you, when you were, I said, coming across, can you think of your all-time York City 11? Because I think it would be a hell of a team. So, can you reveal it?
When
you play, are you going to be left wing?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Good. 4-4-2.
Yeah.
4-4-2.
Yeah. None of this 5-3-1-4. Yeah. Whatever.
Might pass it all the way. Go on. Yeah. Four's yours.
Dino's going to be number one. Andy Mack. We just so calm on ball with Andy Mack. John McPhail, Stanley, Paul Stancliffe. Be another one that I'd do. And I played a lot of games with Gina, who were a really good fullback as well. We started off as a winger, went into fullback. But Alan Ayre was so calm, and he had a great left foot, did well. And his movement as well, and he only could read a game, could Alan Ayre. This is a difficult one, and I still can't. Gary Ford was a brilliant player. John McCarthy, totally two different players. John McCarthy would take it on all day. Fordy could take people on, but the great thing about Fordy was he'd only have half a yard and he'd whip it in, and he had a great right foot. And always difficult. And if I had to do him, I think it would be John McCarthy, simply because he's a flair player as well. Then in midfield, I'd have Simon Mills. Simon Mills never showed his best at York. He went on to Port Vale and he had a great career at Port Vale. And then I'd go, Pep, Nigel Pepper, because you've always got to have somebody there who's going to...
sent off against Darlington.
We'll come back to Pepper. I've got another question. Don't you worry about that, I won't cut it.
And then up front, Keith Walwyn, without a doubt, and Barnett.
Yeah. Good team, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty good team.
Dennis Smith as well.
Dennis Smith, assistant third.
Buzzer, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good to me.
TC, just hold your microphone up.
Oh, sorry, there.
Cheers,
Paul.
I thought you were going to ask him a question.
Yeah.
So, some of your games that you played, you know, Sunderland away 4-2, I know meant a lot to you. You had a good game. Chelsea at home, you got the winner. You hit the bar at Wembley and scored a pen. What was your favourite ever game for York?
It's got to be a Liverpool game. Yeah, Liverpool game at Anfield. But yeah, some of them games you've said, yeah, the Wembley game was a good game. Even though I don't think it was a classic for anybody to watch, to be fair. On the day, I think we were... Me and Ginelli, when we were playing, after about 10 minutes, we said, we're going to beat these today. We know we are. We just had it in us that we were going to beat them. And they had some really good players in their team, and they went on to play.
Yeah, Neil Lennon.
Lennon and kid up front were at Man City Ward. Yeah. They had some good players. Chelsea game, yeah, that was a good game. Fortunate enough to score there. We didn't really perform down at Chelsea. We got beat 3-0 down there, but
Ricky Spurs, you got a hell of a header,
didn't
you?
Header, didn't it?
Unfortunately, his own net for
a great header.
In fact, before we move on from Chelsea, were you in Stringfellows that night?
Yeah, we got Dale Barton's brother. Could get you in anywhere, and says we're in the hotel, and we got back, and we're having a drink, and Bano says our kid's got us to get in this club, and there were about 15 of us, and he got everybody in, straight up front of queue as well. Got us all in. We went on a lot of money. I can always remember going to that, and this was in what 87 something like that. And I think a pint of lager was something like 10-11 quid. I nearly died. So me and another we got a bottle of wine between us and just shared that.
That's wages, then. You mentioned about Wembley. I mean, about soaking everything up at Anfield. Sorry. So Wembley, I imagine, was exactly the same. In fact, you had the Canon tapes, didn't you? Obviously, so you were filming everything.
Yeah.
So you obviously was that because it was sort of like towards the end of your career when you were kind of conscious about that this might be your only chance to play at Wembley.
Well, I definitely thought it would only be a chance to play at Wembley. But yeah, I just wanted to remember it. I mean, show my great grandkids now. I've got one. It was Andy Mack's camera actually. He borrowed it off his father, and over there, pinched it off him on coach, and he didn't get it back till we got back. But that was really good because I know it's a bit of a, if you see it, it's not the best, but when we were taking it, I thought it was great.
But so, was Oscar coming along.
Yeah. Me and Pepper did a few interviews. I interviewed, well, you've seen him anyway. Yeah, so yeah, that thing where, I just wanted to remember it all. Yeah. And
And so you remember hitting the bar as well. It was a great shot, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had a coach load of lads come down from Leeds. There were about 20 of them on a coach. And one of them had put a fiver on me to score, and he wasn't happy that he did that. First thing he told me, and I saw him when I came back to the club, when I got home in Leeds, I went straight to working men's clubs with lads, and he said, "You cost me the fiver, you."
And what did it mean to you to win promotion again, you know, getting towards the end of your career? It must have been a massive moment for you.
Yeah. I mean, after 8 or 9 years I've been there, and we've been through some tough times. Yeah, it was great. It was great to see us get up into that, and to be fair, you'd have to win early day again.
Yeah.
We nearly did, and if I hadn't been Stanley slipped, and that's how they scored, we were there again, weren't we? Near enough.
Getting out God saving Stanley.
Yeah.
And I wanted to finish with Nigel Pepper, because I have heard since I interviewed you, like, you and Nigel were quite cheeky together and got up to quite a lot of mischief, so I wonder if you could share any stories you think you could share.
No.
Fair enough. Tony Gallagher. So, delighted to welcome yet another club legend, hero status in both playing spells, really. I'm now back at the club for a third spell. Mr. Clayton Dawson, everyone. So, So, it's been a weird thing this week. A lot of us have started to forgive Morecambe for 2007, and I wondered, but I wondered how you feel about it now. Have you forgiven them?
No, not at all.
Fair enough. I mean, jokes aside, if that went to VAR now, what do you think would happen?
Yeah, definitely sending off and probably 10-game ban.
Arrested, I reckon.
Yeah.
I don't know, younger people here that haven't seen it. Just GBH, but you broke two ribs in yet?
Yeah, I broke two ribs as well. So it was, and we lost in the playoffs. I think that was the main reason, really.
Yeah.
but no, it was went for 1-on-1, and I think I knocked it around, and the keeper just absolutely clapped me. I don't know how we stayed on the pitch. We managed to score a pen, but I don't know. Looking back, I probably should have went off. I probably shouldn't have went off, but because it was a big game, I think it was on Sky as well. All my family's watching, and I stayed on. And yeah, the pain I was in. It was just, I don't know how he gets out for that, and that kind of cost us the playoff, the promotion.
So let's not forgive him, but change my mind now, you convinced me.
Yeah.
But you won promotion with Brentford and York, so I wondered, I wanted to keep this theme about promotion for obvious reasons. What's the feeling like when you get over the line? Because obviously there's different emotions for different people, and sometimes it's relief for people, sometimes, it certainly was for me in 2022, felt relief after getting out of National League North. But what's it like for you as a player when you win promotion?
Oh, it's one of the best feelings. From you go back to start of season, pre-season, that's where it all starts. You're doing all the running and the fitness stuff for like 6 weeks of pre-season games. That's what it's all for. It's for a successful season, which is promotion. And it's a daunting task, and not many players experience it. So to experience it on a few occasions with myself and other players, and I think they'll tell you the same thing. It's one of the best feelings ever, because you feel like you've achieved the actual goal that you set out for. And it's one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah, and that's it. I won't say rare, but players don't experience loads of them in their career, do they? So when you had the second one with y'all, were you almost appreciating that more because you kind of knew that you might not get a chance to experience this again?
Oh, of course, yeah. So that stage of my career, considering how it went the first time around, to experience it again the second time I was here was the icing on the cake for me. And considering how the season went for us that season, it felt like three seasons in one. We were tipped to get promoted. We had the players, and then we lost the first four games, and then the manager got sacked, and then we was down there in the relegation zone, and then we sneaked in the playoffs and getting promotion. So it was a roller coaster of a season that was.
Yeah, absolutely. And you scored some crucial goals that season as well. Everyone remembers the two Panenkas, I think, more than anything else. And I'm kind of looking back at some of the goals you scored for. I don't ever remember you scoring Panenkas for other clubs. Or is that, am I wrong on that? Or?
Yeah, I think you're wrong on that. I've actually scored about 8 Panenkas in my career.
Yeah, on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a few on YouTube. I think I've scored about 4 Panenkas for Birmingham. Two for Bradford, so 4 in a row as well. So.
But with that then, my second part of that question then is, it's even braver to do it again, isn't it? Because you see now, whenever it gets to penalties now, keepers have their bottle that they're looking at and where they're going. So they must look at him up. Panenka every time. So why don't they just stand there and catch it? How do you have the balls to kind of do it again then?
I think it's all to do with mind games and your run-up really, and just confidence. I think you've got to kind of set yourself, you shape yourself up like you are going for a corner. It's very rare that players do Panenkas 2-3 times in a row. And it's great for a keeper to stand still and not move as well. So 9 times out of 10, they'll go.
Have you always scored them, sorry?
I have, yes. Yeah. I've not missed a Panenka yet. Yeah.
The Legends game next week. And that's that feeling when it went in at Dagenham. That must have been a hell of a feeling to see that. Obviously there's a long wait when you do a Panenka as well, isn't it? It's sort of like, it's slow to get to the net.
I don't think I've scored a Panenka where it's like the last kick of the game and you're losing as well. So that was extra nerve racking as well. But you always make your mind up before the game. And I always felt like the penalties I've missed is the ones that I've changed in the game. Right. So I said to one of my friends that if we do get a pen, I'm going to Panenka it. I did vision to get it 90th minute and the last kick of the game, and they want to send us into penalties. But stuck to my guns, and thankfully it went in.
And let's go back to your first spell. I was looking, it was kind of make or break for your career, wasn't it? I know you've had a few loan spells, haven't you, from Hull,
yeah.
You went to Scarborough. But did you feel like that coming to York? Did you think like this is, you know, it's a permanent move, I've got to kind of make the most out of this, or otherwise, you know, it might not be for me?
Yeah, well, I left Hull. They got back-to-back promotions at the time. Was young, hot prospect at the time, scoring loads of goals. But because they were doing so well, I wasn't able to knock on the manager's door and say, look, I deserve a chance. They did give me my pro, but I think I made about 5 appearances. Did score my debut at 17.
Was it a Berenka?
It wasn't a So, and then eventually got released because they got promoted to the Championship, and Peter Taylor was the manager at the time, and he said, look, we do feel you can have a good career, but not just here, because chairman's giving me loads of money. It's not going to rely on a 20-year-old to lead the line. You'll just be here, in and out, go and make a career for yourself. So I made that decision to drop down the leagues. I did get offer from Doncaster, and I think it was a Lincoln as well. I don't know if they were League 2 at the time, to come back for pre-season. But I felt like I needed to be somewhere where I was going to start and be the main striker. You see a lot of kids nowadays, they tend to go for the name rather than thinking about themselves. So I felt it was the best opportunity for me to make a name for myself and drop down into non-league. And I think it was the perfect decision for me.
Yeah, absolutely it was. But when I was looking at the sort of start of that season, I think it took you a while to get off the mark, wasn't it? Was it maybe 5 or 6 games? And
yeah.
I know Billy McEwen was quite brutal. It could be quite... you know, quite harsh with some of his players, younger players in training. I wonder, what was he quite patient with you getting off the mark, or what was he like?
He was terrific.
Yeah,
he was terrific, because even though I wasn't scoring, I was contributing and working hard for the team, and that's all he wanted. I think the other thing as well, he didn't really want me scoring because I was on a decent goal bonus as well. So he put me on a low wage and a big massive goal bonus. I think once the first goal went in and then they all started backing in, he was like, he told me to calm down and said, pass the ball next time.
Pass it to Matt Comrie,
and not to Andy Bishop, because he was on
he was on
decent amount of goal bonus and decent wages as well.
Yeah. See why he left that.
Yeah.
And that first goal, I think, was one of your best ever Yorkshire goals. It was a Cambridge one, wasn't it? Where you ran literally from your own half.
Yeah.
And that was kind of summed up you as a player at that point, wasn't it? Raw pace, just power, just smashed your way through and a great finish at the end. That must have been some feeling to get off the mark in that particular way as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And those are kind of the goals that I was scoring regularly for, like, Hull City Reserves and the youth team and stuff, because I tend to rely on my pace. It's one of my main assets. And I always tell players, if you've got pace, use it. Because, opposition defenders hate playing against pace, so use it. So I always tried to use my pace, and that was a great opportunity for me to use it in that particular moment. You know, I was in my own half, and I saw a big field, grass, greenery at the other end of the pitch, and I felt like, knock it and run. Literally, yeah. And that's all I did.
Yeah.
And there was no fancy flicks or step overs, just knock it and run, and simple, and put it in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was a great finish. Yeah. There's lots of talk with supporters at the minute about who's going to win the Billy Fenton. That's quite a big thing for us fans. And you're a former winner, aren't you? So I wonder what was that like to win that, particularly after, you know, having those loan spells and having to kind of break into men's football, as it were. What was it like to kind of be a player of the year at a club?
Yeah, it was amazing. And that was like my first experience. And it just goes to show, if you put the hard work in and you are willing to drop down a level and you believe in your own ability, you can achieve stuff. So... That was icing on the cake for me after signing for York City and leaving Hull.
And do you get to keep it for a year?
You get to keep it for a year.
Where the hell do you put it? It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I'll put it on top of my mum's fridge. If I put it anywhere else, it probably would have fell off, but on the fridge it was safe.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go now. I've definitely done the research. 44 goals in 93 appearances, I think it was, in your first spell. I mean, did you feel like, because of the way it ended, you know, not just the kind of Morecambe game, but kind of going to Hibs and York thought they were going to get money for you and they didn't? Did you always feel like there was unfinished business there? I know, like, you can never really plan how football's going to work out, but did you always sort of think, if there is a chance later on down the line, I'd like to...
There was a lot of stuff going in the background. You know, I signed 2 years, went in start of the season asking for a new deal, and that got pushed back. And then we went back just before Christmas, I think it was. There was a few interests from Scunthorpe, a few of us, and I wanted to stay at York. And you know, I remember going to Billy McEwen and Jason McGill at the time.
Ooh. Just for the tape, that was Claire. Yeah. Sorry, carry on, Claire.
So yeah, so we went in and asked for a new deal, and it wasn't anything extraordinary or nothing like that. We just wanted to, you know, prove myself at that level. I wanted to be on, because I think I was the lowest paid player at the time. So you know, did all our groundwork.
You had a massive goal bonus, didn't you?
Massive goal bonus. But I wanted to be, you know, recognised for that work, and just kept putting it off to the point where it's like, okay, Hibs, obviously there was a loophole there, and they approached me and offered me a contract that it was hard to turn down. You know, John Collins, what a player he was as well, came down and watched me and introduced himself and said, you know, he wanted me to play for Hibs. So and I was able to sign because it was a pre-contract, nothing was signed with York. So not many people know this, and feel like I just jumped ship. It wasn't, I wanted to stay, but you know, I think Jason McGill was kind of holding out for the most amount of money. That's the kind of guy you kind of dealing with. So, and it kind of backfired on him. But it's obviously a shame the way I left, and you know, I was close to the fans and the players as well. But it was kind of like, you know, up you kind of thing, really.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And obviously Hibs as well. Like, I know it didn't quite work out the way you probably hoped it had done, but it's a big opportunity, isn't it? I know, like, you know, chance to play in Europe if you do well. Play against the old firm as well, like, you know, there's some big games there, isn't there?
There's a personal point of view, it was a great move for me personally, and like I say, football's such a short career, and you don't want to live with regrets, and to have the opportunity playing the SPL and playing at Ibrox and Celtic Park, and like I say, a chance of playing in Europe as well, they won the Scottish Cup that year as well, so it was a no-brainer for me. It was a hard decision to turn down. So yeah. It was a great opportunity.
There was some talk about you coming back to York, maybe on loan. Was there any truth in that?
I don't think there was. No, I don't know where that came from. But I think it got to the point where after Christmas, new manager came in, Mitsu Patalainen, and I didn't play a single game since. So that's when I think quite a few teams did inquire, but he didn't let me go and he didn't play me. So it was. Yeah, I don't know what the situation was there, but I ended up leaving in the summer, signing for Krug Alexandria. They bought me for, I think it was like £220,000, I think it was, and kick-started my career again.
Yeah, you've got a lot of clubs, haven't you, that like Crewe and Brentford and Birmingham, but you've got, you know, supporters really hold you in very high regards. That has to do with York City. That must be a great feeling to know that there's not just one club, there's lots of different clubs that you can kind of go to and have that warm welcome.
Oh, of course, and it was just me as a player, how I was. I was gave 100%, and I think if you give up 100%, the fans will be behind you no matter how you play. So I always gave my all, and like I say, performance and goals also helps. But I think working hard was my number one, really, and everything else came on the back of that.
Yeah, and 2022, we were talking at the bar, weren't we, about how I thought that was one of your best games for York City, that final. I know you were playing out on the right wing, but you got that great shot that hit the bar with your left foot and just worked so hard for the team that day. And do you feel that was one of your best games?
Oh, definitely. I think there was so much riding on it as well. Not in the sense of like pressure, because the way we kind of sneaked into the playoffs, I think everyone wrote us off because of the way we finished in the league. And I think that helped us because we kept that momentum as well. Where other teams, I think the team that finished second or third had an extra day off, where we were playing games and had that momentum. I think you kind of saw that last year with York City. I think they had 10 days off, didn't they, last year, and didn't really start in that playoff game. So that definitely had an effect, and I think that helped us. And like I said, on a personal point of view, I did feel like it was unfinished business at the same time, but I felt like promotion, experiencing before, and the lads in the dressing room wanted to experience it as well. So I felt like I had to carry that extra on my chest, and I thought, went into the game and I was going to give it all, and I actually did, and it was one of my best performances, like you say.
Yeah, great, great game. And were you disappointed not to stay on the following year? If you look back, you know, you played nearly every game, 14 goals in all competitions, experienced leader at that point, you clearly kept yourself in good shape as well. So were you disappointed not to have another year?
Massively, yeah, definitely. I actually thought I would get another year. If I wasn't, you know, I think there was the John Lewis and a few other players at the time, and I even went into the office and said, look, what's happening next year? I know I might not be a starter, but, you know, having me around and doing bits and bobs and coming on now and again and being around the lads, and I wanted to start my coaching as well, so I thought I could skip into that as well, but now the manager and the chairman wasn't having any of it and said, no, we're going to go in a different direction, which, to my surprise and everyone else's surprise, really, because I'd actually finished the season top goal scorer. I don't think I've ever seen a top goal scorer get released before, so that's definitely one for the books.
Yeah. But you went on to Gainsborough where you were top scorer for them, you got about 30 goals, didn't you? Which I always think it's, you know, quite impressive for someone like yourself who's played like in the Championship, you played international football as well, to have that motivation to play lower down. I know you kind of obviously started in the lower leagues, but to have that motivation to keep going and keep kind of, you must love the game so much to do that.
I just about to say, I just love the game so much. Like I say, it's all I've ever done. It's in my DNA. So, you know, funny enough, it was Neil Bishop, former York City player, who actually gave me the call straight away as soon as I saw I got released from York. You know, we always kept in touch. And he said, oh, do you fancy coming down to Gainsborough and playing for me, doing the job for me? And I said, yeah, of course, definitely, 100%. So signed in the next day. And like I say, it was just one of those things. I just wanted to carry on playing and enjoying my football. It wasn't the case of what league it was in. Like I said, I've had played in the Championship, playing in the World Cups and Copa America and international, and you know, I've done all that. But I was at a stage in my career where I just wanted to still enjoy football and help me out as well at the same time.
Yeah, and then you went on and managed Barnsley Celtic for a year as well. What was that like, going into management?
That was great. It was a great experience. I loved it. It was a player-manager role, so I kind of did the both.
Which not many people do now.
I think I was one of the last ones, really, to kind of do it, really. And it's a difficult process, actually, trying to manage the players and being in the dressing room and then going out and play. It was totally difficult, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But I fully enjoyed it. It's just a case of stuff were going on in the background, which kind of hampered that and didn't help it, because, you know, we survived. We stayed up last game of the season, pre-season before. Had a good start of the season, six games, 3 wins, 3 losses, mid-table, and then for whatever reason, they chose to go to a different direction, and lo and behold, look where they are now. There's no club there at the moment, which is unfortunate, because it was a great club, nice little village as well, great fan base as well, so it was a shame how that ended, to be honest.
Yeah, but it paved the way for you coming back to York City, didn't it?
Yeah.
I just wonder, can you explain what your role is, because I know that you were answering the phones last week when people tried to get lots of tickets. So what do you do on a day-to-day basis? And I see on your Instagram you're often at different games and maybe youth games and stuff like that. So just sort of outline what sort of your day-to-day role is.
I'm kind of like a pathway development coach, so kind of in between the under and 18s, 19s, stroke the first team. So I'll take sessions with the under 18s and the 19s and put on striking sessions for them as well. And just give them that knowledge of what it takes and to make it, and make sure they give 100% every day. And sometimes some of the forwards from the first team want to do some finishing drills and finishing sessions, and I'll put that on for the first team as well. So I'm kind of like in between, trying to bridge that gap between the under 19s and the first team.
And I know that kind of promotion for York City means a lot more, doesn't it, for kind of youth development and academies and in terms of funding. So how does that impact on your role potentially with York getting, hopefully, up this season?
Yeah, hopefully. If you get promoted this season, so I think it'll probably change to like a Cat 2, Cat 3 academy. So you'll get more staffing, which will help the youth play under 18s, which will help massively. And there'll probably be, I think, the Saturday games as well. So the week will probably, I think overall, if we do get promoted, it will help the under 18s. I think it goes to under 18s if we do get into Cap 2 status. But then we obviously, there's a gap that needs bridging, because under 18s, the first team is massive compared to, so there could be a development squad as well, which would obviously help the players, give them that extra year, 2 years to develop further to try and get into the first team as well. So getting promotion will help all that as well, massively.
Well, fingers crossed. And how impressed are you with the current team? So obviously, you're seeing them close hand with the training and all that, and doing some finishing drills. How impressed are you as a former player looking at that side?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, even from last season, the way they performed and backed up all those points and goals and didn't get promoted, I think it was definitely something that they deserved. And this season, they've kind of gone that step further now. And being involved with them and seeing them firsthand and how they train and the quality that they have there, it's definitely a League Two squad, definitely. So I think getting out of this league would definitely be much deserved. And you know, see, you do have to go out and perform and get the results, and which they have been doing. And so hopefully they can keep that going to the end of the season.
And I wondered, I want to put you on the spot here, if you could play up front in that team, would it be alongside Ollie Pearce or would it be alongside Josh Stearns?
To be fair, they're kind of Ollie Pearce with one striker, don't they? And Ollie Pearce has been dropping in as a 10, really. So
you're not answering it?
So I'm not answering it.
So I thought you were going to say all the players are front three. But what do you think of them? They're both fantastic, aren't they? I mean, unbelievable. Yeah, as a strike partnership.
To have them in your squad in any team, you know, gives you a lot of chance, and the quality that they bring in, like I said, the finishing, the goal scoring, all the peers, was, what is he, 60, 70 goals in two seasons for York, which is phenomenal, really, at any level. So, and then Josh Stone's now getting a decent run in the team, and like you say, he's been banging them in as well. So, no, I think, you know, having them two in the team at the same time gives you more opportunities to get more goals.
Yeah, I feel like as well that most of us feel like they can score goals in League Two and League One. You've played in those levels, so do you think they can both make a step up if we did get promoted?
Oh, of course, yeah, of course. Once much of your goal scorer, given the opportunity, the chance, you'll put them away, whatever league it is. It's just obviously service makes a big difference when you go up. You're playing against a lot better opposition, so service has got to be a lot better, which it is. And like I say, you've got Ollie Banks who's been providing terrific balls into that box, which has been a revelation, really, to see. And it's great for, you know, I said to my mate, I would love to play in this York team because the opportunities they create each game is like gold dust, really, and it's like big, like Christmas coming all at once.
That goal bonus would have been so good. And it also feels like, you know, everything is going really well off the pitch as well, and you're very close to that now. So does that feel the case for you that things are united, like, now on and off the pitch, everything's going in the right direction?
Oh, of course, yeah, of course. And I think that makes a massive, massive difference in terms of the growth of the club. It's not just the football team, the 11, the 12, the squad, it's everything behind the scenes as well. And you know, the owners here have done a terrific job. They've invested a lot of money into the club and the city as well. So I think, you know, it's a sleeping giant, and you know, I think it'll just keep progressing.
Yeah. Always a pleasure to have your company, Glenn. Glenn Donaldson, everyone. Thank you.